To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
We are back yet again, all together recording while we still can. Justin, looks like the slow apocalypse is revving up to become the quick apocalypse.
Yeah, I've been saying for 3 years now, worst apocalypse ever.
Yeah, it really has been. It's been disappointing, but
yeah.
It gets crazier by the day. Moneypenny and I have had a lot of conversations about how a lot of paradigms are shifting, a lot of stuff's really, really changing at a rapid rate. Let me think. So, I owe Justin $1. I was like, yeah, we don't need to record because the world's going to end anyway. Yeah. He's like, I don't know. If we make it till to May, yeah, Let's sit down and talk about it. It's like, all right, deal. And here we are. Here we are in May, all together. Justin, any thoughts of returning
March,
to the deep?
Yeah.
Or March, yeah.
Returning to the deep.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. Well, and you're here with us today, and we had to make it kind of strange in our divergent ways. So we got a bourbon. Well, a straight whiskey, because of where it's made, from California. Now, I cannot imagine two things that go together less than whiskey in California. But
yeah,
they grow some of the best grapes there. They have the right climate for it. They have, I think, doesn't that cover almost every climate zone in the U.S.?
They have quite a few.
They have many of them, yeah. And this place is from Sonoma County. It's the bourbon is Redwood Empire Lost Monarch. It is a blend. Blends are becoming the new forefront. I'm actually excited to see this because, you know, you'll get a barrel sometimes that's just too bitter but has great character. A barrel that's too sweet but there's not a lot going on. With a blend, much like a blended wine, we're going to really get some neat stuff. But again, this is not technically a bourbon. It's a blend. It doesn't give me a lot of information on the bottle.
I can help you out there if you like.
Well, I'm going to say something too. We did our good deed for the day. We bought whiskey and planted a tree. So that is one of this company's claim to fame. For every bottle purchased, they plant a tree. They have planted 897,060 trees. I refreshed twice. The ticker did not move up to one, so apparently they have not reported ours yet. But it's a very interesting place. It's in the Redwood Forest up towards Oregon, so that's where they're established at. This is a 90 proof. Again, it's a blend. And as discussed before, we will be starting today with our Glencairns, with a small half-ounce pour.
So, Distiller did a feature on this distillery last June, and they referred to this particular variety, Lost Monarch, as a rye bun. So, because it's a blend of bourbons and ryes, and it's kind of marketed as the perfect whiskey for someone who can't decide between bourbon and rye. So it's supposed to be balanced between sweet and spicy.
Well, it's got an interesting bouquet. Let's give it a shot.
It does. Oh, wow.
It is shockingly sweet. After you get the first bite of it, you think it's going to end up being a bitter whiskey.
Yeah, but it does have that hug that goes all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but it, yeah, it tastes a bit older than I would have thought.
Yeah, I figured being a blended, they would be using 2-year.
Well, if that. So they're not just blending their source product. They are importing whiskeys from Kentucky and Tennessee.
And
as well.
In Indiana.
Fact, they have the highest volume of whiskey barrels, like barrels of whiskey, I should say, in California. So I don't know what they're comparing it to be perfectly honest, but
yeah, this is the first California whiskey I've seen, but I am pretty impressed with this, and I am pretty impressed with the bottle. It's in a wine bottle, fitting.
Similar.
Yeah, very similar.
The top of it is a little bit different.
A little fluted.
Yeah, and the name actually has a meaning.
Yeah, Yeah, so Lost Monarch is the name of a very famous redwood, and it's famous because it's like the third largest in California, the 28th largest in the world. It's 26 feet across. And if you can't visualize that in your head, how long would you say your car is?
My car is probably about 15 feet.
Okay. So
roughly two of them.
And that's your Volkswagen?
Yeah, it's Passat. The Passat. It's the longer
so
of the models.
15 feet. So almost twice as wide as your average four-door sedan is long. That's kind
of
crazy.
That's mm-hmm. the length of the largest reticulated python is 26 feet.
Oh.
That's kind
of
terrifying.
And that's a current record?
Well.
they're breaking some records in the Everglades down there.
Oh, my yeah. God. So there are several famous redwoods, and if you want more information about that, there is a lovely website called famousredwoods.com, and just from personal experience, you wouldn't think trees would be that particularly interesting until you're standing in a forest of those trees.
Yeah.
And it's like they go on forever. Also interesting to note is that redwoods develop in a very interesting way. So I'm not going to get into all of it here, but they're just fascinating trees, fascinating forests, a really beautiful part of the country. And I think it's really cool that they sort of built their brand and their different varieties around different trees.
Yes. Redwoods fascinate me, not only for their size, but their age. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to be around something that's lived that long and had that much time and experience.
Yeah. So pretty cool. I'm kind of a fan of this. I'm not gonna lie. I'm looking forward to the blended bourbons. Looking forward to having some MGP products, which is the old distillery in Indiana. The old Seagram's distillery is now making some top shelf bourbons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it smells so much better down there.
It does.
It's
I mean,
amazing.
It still smells a little weird. Not gonna lie, but mm-hmm. it's not bad.
So. Yeah, one of the things that Justin and I kind of talked about, this has been an ongoing thing. Justin had a experience where he saw a giant black pyramid when he was younger.
Yeah.
He's told me this story forever now. And then we had the military release videos of them chasing a giant black upside down pyramid through the sky.
Yeah.
And now, after this whole balloon fiasco,
yeah,
we're saying, oh, also we've shot at these other things.
Yeah.
And there's now a video floating around of troops in, I think, Iraq opening up fire on what looks like a ball of light.
Yeah.
And that is
it's
very interesting.
It's getting deep. You look at the whole Christopher Mellon, Lou Elizondo, Tom DeLonge saga.
Uh-huh.
It reads like bad science fiction.
It is completely baffling.
A rock star becomes obsessed with UFOs, claims to have all these deep government connections, and is acting like he's on meth. And then all of a sudden, WikiLeaks hacks the DNC in 2016, and we see over 1,000 emails between him and Lou Elizondo, who was the head of TIP, the actual government agency
yes.
in charge of looking into these things. Christopher Mellon, who was the head of Skunk Works, which Skunk Works was supposed to be make-believe. And
yeah.
now we know for a fact that
it was real.
Lockheed and Martin was doing reverse engineering on extraterrestrial objects and technology. It's getting deep. And if you follow, so Tom DeLonge started TTS, which is To the Stars.
Yes.
Not only did Lou Elizondo and Christopher Mellon come out and admit to being in contact with Tom DeLonge, they joined TTS, which is a disclosure movement. It's a company, its whole purpose is to slowly work with the government to disclose what is already known.
Yes.
Lou Elizondo in 2021, the things he's been saying, he speaks very cryptically, I think because he spent 20 years in intelligence.
Yes.
But the things he's saying are pretty mind-boggling.
Well, I'm to the point now where I think everybody's going to Bob Lazar a big apology.
Yeah.
Because he did not say anything that out there.
Yeah.
It just, he was the things that his are character being destroyed.
Yeah, the things that are being proven make Bob Lazar look like a Disney production.
Yeah, all he said was, I was working on this thing. He never really said what they figured out. He said they had some elements that they knew existed that didn't at the time.
I believe it's, is it element 151?
14, yeah, something like that.
But now we know for a fact that that element does exist.
It does.
Was supposedly discovered 30 years
after. It has a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, after Bob Lazar worked with it. But yeah, I fully believe, suspect. I think Bob Lazar will actually be the least of it. I feel like we're on a precipice. The more I look into things and the more I learn about quantum mechanics in particular, which Richard Feynman, who helped create the A-bomb, stated, he's one of the greatest minds in quantum mechanics. He said, no one understands quantum mechanics because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And he said, the one thing I can tell you for sure is that it's all vibrations. And then you look at things like the King's Chamber and the Great Pyramid of Giza, where you have a 70-ton stone that is cut with laser precision and lifted 300 foot in the air after being taken from a mine that's over 300 miles away. We don't know how that was done. We would struggle to do it now. With modern technology, I think we're going to learn a lot about sound technology. All arrows are pointing to sound. I think we're on the precipice of learning a great deal about who we are as human beings and what our past represents. Because if you look at what we know right now, when we were in high school, 25,000 years was the estimate that anatomically modern man had been on the planet.
Right.
Now we know for a fact that's 280,000 plus years. So to say that civilization started when we started writing it down, quote unquote, 6,000 years ago, means that less than 3% of our history we have any knowledge of.
And we were really good at going around and erasing history.
Yeah.
I believe it's North Korea. To this day, their calendar starts with the grandparent when he was born, Kim Sung-un. I probably said that totally wrong.
Yeah.
But he's the one that he literally took over and said, nope, the world starts now.
Yeah.
And
it's crazy.
This whole thing, what we're seeing, the Tom DeLonge thing, for those that don't know, this is the bass player, correct?
Lead singer. Of
Blink-182.
Who literally everyone, even his bandmates, thought he had...
I watched his bandmates just make so much fun of him and say they thought he'd lost his mind.
Yeah.
So now we really run into this human factor on this, right? You think the guys that have this secret knowledge, they've got to be these like evil, super genius figures in the wings. And they're normal people. This all came out because of Guccifer 2.0. This was an individual. It was not the Russian government like they claimed. It was a person who got into Hillary Clinton's email server.
Yeah.
Because he also was under the assumption that there was going to be some smoking gun stuff in there.
Yeah.
Well, there was some bad stuff in there that wasn't what he expected. He openly talks about this now. And he says that it's baffling to hear them say, the Russians, when he's like, I did prison time for this.
Yeah.
And so he's a normal person. He has this whole idea. John Podesta, despite all of this, he's a normal person and he's fascinated with disclosure. Yeah. And he's talking to a member of Blink 182. And these two other guys are like, you seem cool. I like Blink 182. I worked on this project. And they all end up running together. And now Tom DeLonge, I watched him talk to, of all the people for him to have a deep conversation with this about, Steve-O, in Steve-O's hang on, this gets better. And he says that when this happened, when he found out that his email chains with these people were in those Guccifer hacked leaked emails, that he deleted his hard drive, smashed his phone. He thought he was going to be killed and erased from the earth.
Men in Black were coming for him.
He was certain.
And I think why he seemed crazy was because when you learn that something that has been part of pop culture as make-believe for your entire life, when you find out that it's true, it would make you a little crazy when you have literally high-ranking government officials telling you, oh, no, what you thought was real is real. Mm-hmm. Like, we are in contact with at least six different species, one of which is what we evolved to be, from the future.
That is what they're saying. They're saying some of the contact we have is from humans in the future.
That is one of the things Luis Elizondo said in his last public interview. And if anyone would have their ear to the where the rubber meets the road on this, it would be Lou.
Would be him. Now, Bob Lazar did say that they would often release complete nonsense.
Well, Lou Elizondo admitted he was part of PSYOPs.
Yeah.
He literally faked landings. He spread false information.
Yes.
And there is an arm in the UFO community that fully believes that Lou Elizondo is pulling the biggest PSYOP right now. That he is actually not disclosing anything. He's lying.
He's doing... Well, this is what happened when they originally came up with the whole term conspiracy theorist. It became very important to keep state secrets.
Yeah.
And you would have random people turn out to be just normal humans, get drunk at a bar and brag about it.
Yeah.
And so this is where the whole term came from. So one of the ways they did it was... Let's just blanket these people with all of these crazy theories.
That way you can't sift through the bullshit.
You can't sift through the nonsense, and people that are the normal susceptible will be able to sift through it, but you have the two types of people, the people that will believe and the people that won't. They get bogged down in looking for Space Bigfoot and stuff, as opposed to looking, hey, there's literal videos you can watch where they're chasing these planes around.
Yeah.
Listen to a thing... A lot of people during the Korean War, we were pretty active over there. There were a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of sightings. And they would slander these people.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they'd say, everyone's going to think you're crazy. Don't talk about it.
You look at the term Foo Fighter. That comes from World War II.
Yes.
I mean, that was our first time at such an industrial level in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And during wartime. And literally, we've been seeing these things since, essentially since the Atomic Revolution.
Yeah.
But I think if you look back into history, they've always been there. I think, look up what an angel actually looks like.
Well, I just got through the Book of Enoch.
Yeah.
And when you read the Book of Enoch,
this
is the Bible, Old Testament, but totally lit.
Well, I mean, it's considered non-canonical. It's considered apocryphal. It's not part of the Bible. But
but it's not part of the final assembly cut. This is the director's cut.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets deep. I mean, and it fits right in with what we see in Sumerian text with the Anunnaki coming down and creating man from... an extant species that was already on the planet, mixing their DNA with ape DNA and creating a slave race. It gets deep very quickly.
So the angels, the set Malacca. Of angels that you see repeatedly mentioned in the Old Testament are known as the Watchers. That's the translation
Malacca
from the Book of Enoch. Yeah. And then the Watchers decide... They want to intermingle with humans. Yeah, and
they create the Nephilim.
This is where God comes in and talks to these humans that are like, you're not supposed to be here. They messed up. And we get...
And it's funny because depending on the translation, the Nephilim are either considered monsters, giant monsters, or giant men of renown.
Yes.
They were the heroes of old, is how it's put in the Book of Enoch. It's very interesting, but that's supposedly what caused the deluge, that gods saw the evil they were bestowing upon man through knowledge. They were giving man knowledge, and he wanted that to stop, so he flooded the world.
And when I read it, the knowledge seems to be the knowledge of how to take resources from the earth and make an economy.
Yeah.
And make a trade and make these things. And we see kind of where we're at now with fiat currency and all of this. Yeah. I would believe that that was, like, evil, and God didn't want that originally.
Yeah. Well, and there was quite a lot of knowledge that was supposedly forbidden that they were, that these fallen angels were accused of teaching. So, how to make weapons,
math,
cosmetics,
yeah,
the workings of the moon,
yeah,
which, you know, as we know, for a long time, that was really the only way to, like, tell how time was passing. And,
yeah, lunar calendars.
And navigation.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not terribly religious, so I obviously take this all with a grain of salt, but it's interesting. All of these things that kind of advance us as a society and help us learn to problem solve and think for ourselves.
We're, yeah, because we no longer need God. But,
right.
I kind of believe, I don't take things that Graham Hancock says as gospel by any means, but I do believe there's enough evidence for a Younger Dryas event, which would be end of the last ice age. There was a global civilization with a large population globally, and a meteorite or meteorites hit the ice shelf and caused the deluge. There's no reason, and they're called mythomemes, that you see in comparative mythology. You look across the globe and you see these same things pop up over and over again in every culture across the globe, and a deluge myth is one of them, a flood myth that is across the globe.
It's everywhere.
It's ubiquitous. So you also see, it's called the Chaos Comp, which I'm not sure what this would have been, but it's always a god of some sort, generally a storm god, fighting a large monstrous sea monster or reptile.
Yeah.
You see it across the globe. It is absolutely ubiquitous. It even happens with Leviathan and Jesus in Revelations. It happens with Thor and Jarmunder. It's ubiquitous. So there's several mythomemes I would like to understand how they came to be. Dragons are ubiquitous. Was that just the bones of dinosaurs, or did we actually live with some of these creatures at one point?
I've heard a very interesting theory that a lot of stuff was cosmic events.
Yeah.
And if you think that we're also thinking that a meteor or meteors struck the Earth, could you imagine what the sky would look like at that time?
Yeah.
We call these constellations, all of these things, they'd made these shapes, and all, that goes way back as far as we can. So it would mean no surprise that they come up with this theory of, well, that meteor coming in and the serpent fought this and that, you know, it hit the...
Have you read anything on Gnosticism? These people consider themselves Christians. They supposedly died out in the 15th century.
Right.
But there's the Sassadens, the Saadens, the Maedens. There's several Gnostics, but most of them consider themselves Christian. They believe that Yahweh is a false god, or Jehovah is a false god, that there is actually a female god. One name is Sarah. I'm not sure of a more common name for her. But that Yahweh used two angels or demons named Nebron and Soklos to fool the world into worshiping Yahweh. So to the Gnostics, they believe that all modern Christians are fools. They're worshiping a fool. It gets deep very quickly. And this was in direct competition to what we would consider mainstream Christianity.
Yeah.
This wasn't some fringe group. This wasn't a small cult throughout the Middle East. This was huge in the Roman Empire. I mean, we had temples for these people.
Was this the third religion or three religions that Islam's based out of?
So there's some questions there. We don't really... So we know that the Abrahamic religions came from early Judaic practices, occult practices, and it came from Canaanite, old Canaanite religions. We see the word El and Baal. Now you have a bunch of quote-unquote Wiccans saying they worship Baal. That's an old Canaanite god, and it literally means God. It's a title.
Continually throughout, that is who the Israelites continually go back to worshiping.
Yeah.
When they make the idol of the
calf. Yeah, when they're making the idol. Yeah. The calf idol is actually a Canaanite god named Moloch.
Yeah.
And there's some evidence that in Carthage, children were sacrificed to Moloch, and we think that might be where the idea of Satan comes from, this bull-headed god, where that children were sacrificed to through fire. There's a great book, it's a work of fiction, but it's one of my absolute favorite pieces of fiction, called The Library of Mount Shar, that involves Moloch and his bronze bull idol for grilling purposes. It's pretty interesting, but it gets deep, and then you get in... We get into the 19-teens, we get into the 1920s, and then you see, especially like in upstate New York, you see thousands of cults just bloom out of nowhere. Uh-huh. And you see it happening with Thelema and with Aleister Crowley, who was considered the most evil man, the most sinful man in the world.
Most wicked man in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, the Thelema was Crowley's. It actually started in 1900. And he got to be pretty well known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember reading a lot about Aleister Crowley in my I'm going to study all of the religions phase in high school. Yeah, and Wicca was you know, fascinating because there were so many different kinds. And it wasn't just Wicca, it was like paganism, all of this. And then, but then kind of with a constant understanding that all of these can be traced back to a person.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, do I believe that Aleister Crowley and his ilk are, like, prophets of a new era or something?
Wizard.
Like, no, but I feel about it the same way I felt about any religion, which is if it leads you to, you know yourself better and...
Yeah. Being enter a better the world person.
Better than cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, Aleister Crowley had such an odd influence on society.
Yeah. He did. He did. In 1904, he claimed that he was, and this is much like Mormonism comes about, he was contacted by an entity, I don't know if this was in a dream or what, named Awas.
Yeah,
and this is what led him to found
him and
the Book of
wife.
Law. His were, wife like, was involved.
In Cairo in 1904.
Yeah, he believed it all happened through the gods of ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that Egyptian mysticism was very heady at that time.
Yeah, there was. I mean, people were literally eating bits of mummy because they thought that it
was going to give them
some magic power or make them immortal.
Well, Chinese medicine is still to this day like powdered tiger penis.
That's exactly like that. Where I went.
Yeah,
yeah, that's they I still do like, that.
It's insane. Mm-hmm. When I was born, there were 9 tiger species in the world. There's now only 6 because of tiger fucking penis soup, and that pisses me off.
There are more tigers, wasn't it? Joe Rogan actually said this in one of his stand-ups. There are more tigers in Texas than in the wild.
Than in the wild.
That's terrifying.
And he said this predating Tiger King, didn't he?
Yeah,
significantly.
It's kind of crazy. We're quickly killing everything, but the Siberian tiger, I think very few people understand what the majesty of the Siberian tiger is. You're talking about a 7-foot-long animal that weighs 600 pounds.
Yeah. It has a mile-long range.
Yeah.
It patrols its entire
territory. Amazing creatures. And, they're dying for their penises. It's real crazy.
I don't know. I feel like if that was happening to human males, they'd like
be
proud of it
in
some odd way. Yeah.
Maybe the tigers are down. They're like,
maybe the tigers are like, cool we'll be famous forever.
Yeah.
Or not. I mean, but...
They're envious.
Yeah.
But going back to like the Thelema, or how do you even say that?
That's correct. That's right. Yeah.
So what I found fascinating is how many like... relatively famous people were part of that, including at least one person who went on to found his own cult, or religion, I guess. Sect? Cult? No, it's a cult. I'm convinced it's a cult.
Well, a charismatic leader, there are certain things that go into being a cult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, and there's rules for it to be a cult.
Yeah, let's see here. But what I was referring to while I'm looking this up was L. Ron Hubbard.
Yes.
Who founded the Church of Scientology.
Scientology.
Yes.
And,
which plays right into what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, a system of religious veneration directed toward a particular figure or object.
Yes.
A relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister.
Yeah.
Hmm. Or a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing. Oh, so like cult of personality.
Yes.
Interesting.
Which L. Ron Hubbard ties into what we're talking about with the whole UFO thing. One of the founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, which helped innovate how we propel our rockets, is Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons had a crazy, crazy life. Brilliant. He was a Stanford dropout that was so brilliant and had such a great mind for rocket science, essentially, that he was noticed by other rocket scientists and was able to found the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's GILSEC.
And the Aerojet Engineering Corporation.
Yeah.
Right.
He made advancements in solid fuel rockets primarily, but he also worked with liquid fuel. And this is a guy that literally was a priest of Thelema, had the Oto, which I can't remember what Oto stands for, but it was essentially his own branch of Thelema, his own compound. He after cheating on his wife with her sister, married her, who was much younger, got her into Thelema.
She was 17 when he got involved with her.
Why not?
Yeah. Here it is. OTO stands for Ordo Templi Orientis, which was the Agape Lodge branch of the Thelemite Order that Jack Parsons was put in charge of. His house became their headquarters once he married the sister, who eventually cheated on him with L. Ron Hubbard.
Wow.
It sounds like they may have all been pitching in the bedroom at one point.
Yeah, there's definitely some belief that they were all sex-crazed and kind of living in kind of what we would think something out of the 70s, right? These love nests in
they were obsessed with sex magic. He's known for that, and it's just shocking to me, right? We now have our forefront guy of space travel is Elon.
Yeah.
And he just gets every movie makes, he gets hate for it.
Yeah.
But back in the day, we had Parson, and then we had Operation Paperclip. So we had actual Nazis and occultists running NASA, and nobody had a problem with
it. Well, they did eventually have a problem with it. They deleted him from documents. They kicked him out of his own laboratory. Even his death kind of looks like a homicide done by the government.
Coincidentally, this is really similar to Bob Lazar's story.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Shocking.
But one of the things I found interesting, he forgave L. Ron Hubbard for cheating with his wife and proceeded Sarah, the wife, L. Ron Hubbard, and him proceeded in 1945 to conduct what was called the Babylon Working, which was a series of days-long rituals to invoke the Thelemic goddess of Babylon here on Earth. This is literally just 2 years after being kicked out of his own jet propulsion labs. He was later, at the age of 37 in 1952, he was working in his own garage, supposedly on a rocket, and it blew up and all of his documents were incinerated. He was incinerated. There's some questions
there. Yeah, his mother killed herself with an overdose of pills hours later. It was just very fishy.
And his name was literally deleted from documents around the same time. It's literally scientific studies he had led that led to advancements in rocket propulsion. And all of a sudden, his name's no longer on the paper. He's no longer credited. Yeah. It was like they kind of tried to erase him from the history.
And that could easily be done in the past.
It could be.
The time of yeah, you're in the time of liquid, but still, yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, pre-internet, mm-hmm, and I mean, we were able to pull off Project Paperclip for, what, 60 years before anyone,
yes,
noticed.
We were.
I mean, literally, we had several Nazis that went on to win major awards, mm-hmm, for their advancements. And this goes back to, what do you do when you have power? Because we knew if we didn't snatch up these brilliant Nazi scientists that the Russians would.
Yeah, they so, would end up in the USSR.
Yeah, we knew that as fact. So, yes, it's wrong to side with Nazis. But most of the people we took on during Project Paperclip were not... They were Nazis from out of convenience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They gave them the funding. It wasn't even their belief system. It was, you're going to give me the money to do the science I want to do? Awesome. Like, so, I mean, I can't say that it's right, but I can't say it's completely wrong either.
Well, the weirdest thing is, this ties back to the banks. I did some kind of looking, just history brush up on World War I and II. And pretty much the U.S., we were responsible for World War I. Now, yeah, the Germans did sink a Freightliner.
Yeah.
But the deal with that was Germany was kind of dependent on us for food.
Yeah.
And Great Britain said, well, if you'll cut them off and quit selling them food, we'll buy all kinds of cotton from you.
Yeah.
And I think it was Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, he's the one who put us in the Federal Reserve. He said, sure, why not? And went for it. And within no time, they said, if you don't go back to our deal, if you keep starving our people,
yeah,
we're going to start sinking every ship that comes our way.
Yeah.
And this is the Lusitania gets sank. Boom. Yeah. World War One.
Which some say was a false flag event.
Right.
It didn't actually happen the way it was portrayed. But it's interesting. Woodrow Wilson later said that he was forced to put us in the reserve. So who knows whether that was his ideas or if his hand was forced there. But he said in, I believe, 1915, I believe it was 1915, said this country is quickly on its way to be sold to the corporations.
Yeah.
We will no longer be the United States of America. We'll be the United Corporations of America. That was in 1915.
Yeah.
And the corporations have consistently won since. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost 100 years later in 2006, or almost exactly 100 years later, 101 years later in 2016, Citizens United happened, where we, for the first time ever, decided that corporations have all the rights of a human being.
Yeah.
Which is absolute insanity in my book.
It's crazy, and I've actually talked about this, because when you get... This is the whole reason that a group of teenage boys will do things that an individual would never do.
Yeah.
When a corporation exists, it exists not on an interpersonal level. It is there to sustain itself, so it is at minimum sociopathic.
Yeah.
Then you... It's at minimum narcissistic, and if it gets to the point where they're using that influence to perform lawfare, eminent domain, it's psychopathic.
Yeah.
And this is by design. So when you give them the rights of an individual, which I've heard this in the courtroom personally, it's just kind of astounding. I'm like, no, you people don't have any personal investment in any of this. Your
entire job is to take care of the system that you've created. It's crazy. And then you look at the major way it affects the American people is through campaign finance. Because individuals do not have to disclose when they give tens of millions of dollars to this candidacy or that candidacy. And now if McDonald's wants this candidate to be the next president, they can donate billions without telling anyone.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
Whereas if you're Dinesh D'Souza and give 10 grand to two of your friends to give to another friend, they for the first time in history, he was put in prison, and that was in the 2000s that this happened.
That's so insane.
You think we'd have figured this stuff out. This is a lot of the laws on the books need to be removed, but...
They do.
It's just so difficult to bring it up.
I think when... this is my own personal belief, but I think step one to America being what it could be would be to ban lobbyists outright.
Yeah.
It's legalized bribery. That's all it ever was.
It absolutely is.
Mm-hmm. And it's always, we're always going to cater to special interest groups because that's where the money comes from.
Mm-hmm.
As long as lobbyism, and that's why I was such a huge supporter of Lawrence Lessig, who is probably the greatest constitutional mind alive today. He literally wrote most of the constitutions for all the former USSR countries. He's absolutely brilliant. And he said, I will never be elected president because for me to be elected president, the power system I want to rail against would already have to be dismantled.
Yeah.
For me to ever have a chance. The way he puts it, it's a kind of a hopeless situation. The game is rigged.
Well, we all know it's rigged now because, you know, I had to fight with my bank over a $250 charge someone made.
Yeah.
The guy didn't understand what I was saying to him, and he approved it.
Yeah.
So, to me, this is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Now we have Silicon Valley Bank, and they said, this is what got me. FDIC insures $250,000 in your account. Okay, most of us will never, ever have to fear.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I might lose that extra couple $1,000s. No, we're not going to have to worry about it. They said 90% of the individuals banking with that bank, quote, banking, because it does not look like it was a bank, that they had deposited more than $250,000. Now, they have made me jump through hoops to move 10 grand around.
Yeah. And this is another big issue. I think we need to bring back Glass-Steagall. Glass-Steagall was done away with by Bill Clinton in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And all Glass-Steagall did, and it was one of the best simple pieces of legislation after the Great Depression, it said if you're a capital bank, that's all you can do. If you're an investment bank, that's all you can do. You can't mix the two. You can't gamble with the people's money.
That is exactly what Silicon Valley looks as if it was a stock exchange of types.
That was masquerading
under the protections of banks, and it worked.
Yeah.
You can tell me this wasn't a bailout until you turn blue in the face, but when you say, no, we're going to insure everybody's money, it's like, well, wait, what?
And what's it called? Fractional debt is how our banks function.
They can loan 9 to 1.
Fractional debt banking. That's insane. They don't even have to have the money.
No.
Well, and the way that the banks themselves are protected by the federal government is different than and separate from the FDIC. And what's so fascinating is, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about, well, this happened because during Trump's presidency, there was some loosening of some 2010 regulations.
Right, yeah.
That's interesting because that Glass-Steagall Act is probably eventually directly responsible for the original, the housing collapse in 2008.
Yeah, it is. When it was repealed, when Glass-Steagall was repealed, there was a Republican, I cannot think of his name, the Republican senator out of Colorado. He wrote a book called Against the Grain because he was literally the only senator that voted against it. The only one, single one. And he said, this is going to cause a depression.
Yeah.
There's no way it's not. You cannot let the banks gamble with the people's money.
Yep.
We've seen this show before. We know how the movie ends.
Yep.
And he estimated by 2001 it would happen. He was about 7 years off. It happened in 2008.
Yeah.
The Great Recession, which was by all markers of depression. It's absolutely insane.
I was told something very interesting about the 08 collapse as well. And this is from a person that does investment banking. He's wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually got it through his brother. He said that the 08 collapse made more millionaires than any event in history.
Yeah. It's just like with the USSR. When it collapsed, look at all the billionaires that came from that. Because all these autocratic guys with money in the bank, they literally just bought up all the state assets.
Well, and I think we need to look at the after effects also of the fact that, so all of a sudden, all of these banks are foreclosing on properties, and they have all these property assets, which does actually limit their ability to lend money, right? So they have to sell off some of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they know that if they flood the market with all of these houses,
they'll be worthless.
Yep.
They'll be worthless.
Yep.
So they held on to them in some cases for so long that they were not habitable anymore. And
they
at the same time,
literally had no value.
Exactly.
Real world value.
And at the same time, builders stopped building speculatively.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, we were building at a much, probably a tenth of the rate we had been building up to that point.
Yeah.
Population growth, by the way, did not significantly change the rate.
Yeah.
So at this point, we are still, I'm not sure how long it's going to take us to stop suffering from the negative effects of that housing crisis.
I don't know that we ever will.
Because the supply issue is still there.
Yeah.
And there's so many barricades to...
I've heard several experts say that we will never... the chances of America surviving long enough to stop feeling the effects of the 2008 housing crisis are slim.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's why every time I talk to someone who's waiting for, like, a buyer's market to come back, I'm like, you need that. In order for that to happen, you need to have more inventory than the buyers need.
Yeah,
that is going
there
to
needs to be
all...
more supply than demand.
Well that is like, what you how you get
afraid
hyperinflation.
It would happen.
Yeah.
We were all afraid it would happen during COVID.
Yeah.
That, you know, that... I mean, initially, we had no idea what to expect. It sounded very scary. It sounded like many, many, many people were going to die.
That's
and
how
that
it was
definitely attacking the older people. And it was definitely discussed that maybe this will open some housing inventory. And I know that that sounds awful, but it's also like we've got to find something good about
this,
right?
Thing they don't tell you about the bubonic plague, or the Justinian plague for that matter, is everyone that survived... their lives on large scale got better.
Yeah.
It's good for the economy to clear out.
Yeah, if you can afford to lose $100,000 in investments, guess what? You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
If your 401k halved in value, but you can still pay your bills, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's,
I don't want to hear it.
What's scary is we see this SBC Bank and all this going down, SVB, and there's more of them now that are also collapsing that are just being bought into other banks.
Mm-hmm.
A buy-in is terrifying.
Yeah.
That would mean your bank buys another bank that's collapsed, and they have your money there, and it's just numbers on a screen, and if they're gone, this is why runs on the bank happen.
I just watched a video last night. I'm trying to think whose video it was. It wasn't Johnny Harris's. Mm-hmm. But it was about a bank that has bought three collapsing banks, and it itself is collapsing. They think the whole purpose for it buying these other banks is to... minimize what it looks like.
Yeah,
to
buffer it.
Make it look
like... And then
like
they can say it was
only
their fault.
One bank collapsed instead of seven.
And when they say they're going to bail these banks out or just pump this money out and stuff, and we know for a fact, not only in the housing market, but in daily life, I was doing restaurant ordering, and we couldn't get random paper goods at all.
Yeah.
Because they just didn't have them. There's still a lot of supply side stuff that needs to catch up. How many, wasn't it 2023 Fords? They had to store them because they couldn't get ECUs for them.
Yeah. And then you've got Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, saying, oh, we have infinite resources. Infinite.
Yeah. This is how in the USSR.
Infinite. He was just exaggerating, but.
The word infinite is a theory.
It's not
provable.
Thing. No. Okay. Show me how to turn infinite resources into Ford ECUs because we really need those right now.
We are on a finite planet with finite resources. You cannot have infinite growth. You cannot have infinite money in a place with finite resources. It doesn't exist.
It just doesn't exist. And this is exactly what happened in Germany, exactly what happened in the USSR. USSR, milk is $4. But when the store only has 6 gallons of milk, they're not going to sell it for $4.
Yeah.
This
it
is how the actual.
What you
and
say.
This is your different schools. This is Austrian economics. People will pay what they think it's worth or
what it's
what they have
is.
To because they need it.
Yeah. And you look at Germany in the interwar periods. American dollar to the Deutschmark in the interwar period was 14 trillion to one.
Yeah.
14 trillion.
The We've money never was worth seen... more to feed into your furnace to stay warm.
It was. Yeah. People were literally burning the Deutschmark to get through the winter because it was worthless.
Cheaper than firewood.
It's like insane. That video game I've been playing. Where you literally are just throwing post-apocalyptic and you're just throwing cash as tinder
really?
On the fire. Yeah, really? Yeah.
It has no point.
Because it has no real world value. Yeah. It only has value because we as a people have decided that we're going to share in the delusion that it has value.
Now, I will say, like a security of banking perspective, I would have thought that of all countries... the Swiss would, like, have an unlock, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But no. Well, on Sunday, even Credit Suisse, like, was taken over, but we know, I mean,
you
it's
know what
clear
that
why.
Yeah,
that's insane.
And, like, a short-term loss guarantee from the Swiss government and liquidity from the Swiss National Bank. Like, it was, like, saved, kind of.
I feel like... we've been sold this bill of goods that there are adults in the room. Mm. And we're just finding out there are no adults.
They all need to go back to the kid table and let some people like us that have lived it come up and say,
Yeah, it was all just kids with their hand in the candy jar the entire time.
I recently heard something about the percentage of people in this country who actually... go to college and are college educated. Mm-hmm. And it was much lower than I envisioned in my head. And then I started thinking about, you know, when I was growing up, we always talked about, you know, representation between men and women by percentage of population. But I had never thought about representation between social classes and education classes and economic classes in politics. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's quite clear that once you get to even the state level legislature, those people are people who don't have the struggle that the vast majority of people they are governing have.
Well, if you recall, this was a couple years ago, Kid Rock had joked that he would run for office.
Yeah.
And the predictors came out and said that he would win it in a landslide.
Yeah.
Because people know that he's been rich, but... just the act of fixing his ticket prices, because he said he was losing touch with the people that actually keep him famous, was probably the most altruistic thing you could do, and better than most anything his competition had ever done.
Yeah.
So he did not do it, unfortunately. I think that would have been interesting.
You look at, like, there's several people that have gone on to do things. I don't know if you're familiar with the comedian Ralphie May. He was... incredibly obese.
I remember
a few years ago. He literally would not charge more than $25 for a ticket. He wouldn't allow it to happen because he was like, I couldn't afford $50 a ticket when I was a kid. He was like, I'm trying to inspire the next me. Like, and I can't do that if I'm pricing all the people I love out
of the room.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very interesting guy.
Yeah, and then you read things like how Adele's latest concert tickets are selling for over $5,000.
Yeah,
that is exactly, I think it was a...
and it's so funny because it's a prime example of how our country runs. The people with money go and buy up all of the tickets.
Yeah.
And
I know a guy who made a lot of money with a ticket reselling platform.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's doing is legal. I can't fault him.
Friend when Phish did the reunion tour. He set up a program to buy every ticket that he possibly could in the first 5 minutes they're on sale.
Yeah.
Literally, a world tour sold out in 7 minutes. Uh-huh. The entire tour sold out. It was like 7.5 million tickets sold out in 7 minutes. And he bought up several thousand just using this program he had designed and sold them for quadruple what he purchased them for, and his were cheap comparison to everyone else that was
doing. The front
that's why
seats.
It sold out in 7.5 minutes is because everyone, all the people that purchased them in those 7.5 minutes were scalpers.
Well, and it's funny because I used to buy tickets for events in San Francisco, especially like baseball games, for example, where I just wanted to see if I could get really good seats, because most of those are season ticket holders.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So sometimes I would check, and it would be way out of my price range. I'd be like, okay, that's too much to pay for a night out. But sometimes, you know, it was like, they've already paid for all of these tickets, so anything they get at this point is fine. So sometimes I get a ticket for $50.
Yeah.
That was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, to like be in foul ball catching territory.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There you go.
It's crazy.
It was a Kanye West concert. That's what it was. The Kid Rock looked at the tickets and said the cheapest ticket was like $1,000. And he said, that's not your people.
Terrible.
That's insane.
And now Kanye is doing everything he can to not be famous anymore. He wants out. He wants completely out. Man, Kid Rock predicted it. That's not your people, man.
So insane.
Wild times we live in. I don't even know where to go with the just craziness we've been seeing. So, guaranteed we'll get something more about the extraterrestrial life / UAP. That's the official government designation, unidentified aerial phenomenon. So we'll get more information about this.
The only person who has used the word alien when talking about this in a public forum is Lou Elizondo. Tom DeLonge has not mentioned aliens.
Yep.
He has only mentioned UFOs or UAPs. Christopher Mellon has not mentioned aliens. Lou Elizondo has only mentioned aliens once.
Uh-huh.
They're being very cautious on the use of the language, because look how impactful words are right now.
What?
Have you seen the water study from the Japanese scientist in the 90s? So he took water, put it into petri dishes, and he took a piece of tape that said love and taped it on this petri dish, then hate on another. Then he froze these petri dishes. And he was able to prove on a vibrational level that words matter. The photos are absolutely astounding. The ones that had negative connotation words on them are all misshapen. The crystals, the ice crystals, are misshapen and misformed. It is, and the ones that have pretty words on them are all beautiful.
So
absolutely beautiful.
I do remember the studies they were doing. This was a while back when it was the whole observation changes reality. And they would take like a top that would spin on a set platform.
Yeah.
And have someone view it and think about it moving, and they could drive it off the table. And they were really thinking, how is this even possible?
Yeah.
They did prove that observation changed the behavior of objects.
Well, we proved that with the double slit study. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we send light through the two slits, we see a wave interference pattern on the far wall. But if you send individual photons that make up the light, there's no more pattern interference as long as we're watching, as long as we're paying attention.
Yeah.
And that brings us to biocentrism. Biocentrism states that the universe only exists through observation, that nothing is real until it's observed.
Tree falling down in a forest. It gets really scale.
Buddhist Koan.
Or bear using the restroom.
It becomes very foo-foo Buddhist Koan type shit very quickly. It all falls apart. But it.
When I was a kid, my mom bought me a book that was like kind of themed around questions like that, that like didn't have a definitive answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably because I was that, you know, why kid.
Always like, why.
Why does this? How does this work? What do you mean? And
To anyone that wants to look up the water experiment, it is Dr. Masaru Emoto's water experiments. Very, very interesting stuff. And, apparently, one of his students or followers, whoever, followed up by looking at the effect of fluoride on water. And, it's not good.
Fluoride that we think of now is not exactly the fluoride like the paste you get. It's an industrial waste product.
Yeah.
That is similar enough to fluoride.
Yeah.
And that was kind of shocking to me. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I've seen this before. Depleted uranium rounds.
Yeah.
That we said were perfectly safe. Yeah. And there's a good chance those were what caused Gulf War Syndrome. Yeah. Depleted uranium being the uranium that's used in nuclear projects that is no longer good.
Yeah.
It's super dense.
No longer radioactive.
Yeah, super dense. Oh, they proved it was radioactive. Yeah, it's super dense, so it makes great armor penetrators. So when you're shooting it out of the 20 millimeter guns out of the helicopters, you know, it's sealed in a case, and then it hits the tank and explodes.
Yeah.
Let's think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Then what are we going to do? We're going to go down there and set up camp. Yeah. So, yeah, that was... We've been through this a few times. Also, what's the big mountain that's on a reserve? It's like Native American land that we dump all the nuclear waste into.
Oh, in Nevada?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should check on that. Yeah. I'm just saying. I would like a report on that annually.
So you grew up kind of poor. Did you grow up poor at all?
I'm afraid not.
No. Okay. So you probably do not remember government cheese.
Oh, I don't. No.
Government cheese, was delicious. I just learned, was all stored in a cave in Nevada. That's where it came from. That's where it came from. It was surplus cheese. We didn't know what to do with it. And we were storing it in caves.
Well, they bought it from, like, dairy farmers.
Yeah, to prop up the dairy farmers. Yeah.
Well, this has been something we've been doing delicious. For generations.
Much like Britain bought a lot of cotton from us.
Yeah.
Yes. But, I mean, even, like, as far back as, like, the Great Depression, we were still propping up farmers.
Yeah. Yeah, we've always
because we do recognize done the need subsidies that, like,
for farmers.
Growing our own crops is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yes.
And, and raising our own livestock, food think supply. That's lovely.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, for whatever reason, I don't understand it on a large scale, although I probably should because I come from a long line of dairy farmers.
This is true.
The government has been subsidizing farmers in various ways for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have something to do with the transition from, you know, for example, my grandparents had a dairy farm, a relatively large one, but a private dairy farm, and they also had 10 children. So guess who worked on the farm?
The children.
Those 10 kids and my grandfather.
That's how agriculture has been done.
The years, like one or two other employees. But nowadays, with smaller family sizes and with needing to pay people, you know, a decent amount of money because it costs money to live places.
Yeah.
I could see how running a farm takes a lot more money. It does. Even like
especially out of the box. On smaller scale. Right. Smaller scale farms are always going to be the hardest to sustain because it only takes one bad year and just now you're in huge amounts of debt. I mean, look at a combine. Just a combine to harvest your crop, you're talking $100,000, $150,000 for state of the art equipment. Mm-hmm. There's a family farm in my mom's side of the family that we've leased out the land to farmers. Right. And it's not enough land anymore because parcels have been sold off over the last 200 years to actually have a workable farm. So what this farmer uses it for is test cropping. So he uses different products on the soil. And to watch him farm is a different thing. He uses nothing but drones.
Yeah.
Nothing but drones.
Yeah, there's so much technology.
It's insane. From his aerial drone, he can test the pH of the soil, which I do not understand how that's possible. Mm-hmm. By looking at the soil through the drone, he can tell its pH.
I mean, I think it's nuts. That with ultraviolet light.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. It'd be something similar to LIDAR, perhaps.
Yeah. Even doing these for the drone work, for surveying and stuff, you have to have a special license because it has gotten to be that big of a deal.
Yeah, if you're using drones for commercial purposes at all.
Yeah, he does all of it through a drone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's so insane. It's so insane.
It's so silly. Now, if it's your own drone and you're just using it, arguably, like that man, if he's using it
private use,
he might not need a license, but like if he was paying someone to do that for him,
they'd have to be licensed.
It's lucrative,
and by FAA license, that means you need actual flight training. You don't get it. It's insane.
That is,
I don't get now. At the same time, do I want random drones in my backyard watching me while I'm in my hot tub? No, I don't.
I think so when I finally slip into senility and wear my bathrobe in public and collect parts for my rocket ship, I will also be shooting down drones.
That sounds like a really fun time, though.
This is a likely scenario.
It really is.
Yeah. The if you've ever owned a decent quality drone, it will give you the maps of where you're not allowed to fly it. There's a lot of restrictions on airspace, military bases, things that like that.
Sense. So around here, there are some places
we are on the very edge of the no-fly zone per my old map. Now that might have expanded, but not because of the base that's here, which is strange to me. There's an airport that houses something called Panther Contingency Plan, which is the most secret thing I've ever ran across. I have my theories on what they're doing there.
I mean, they've done some crazy things at Cop Panther. I mean, they were doing literal zombie. They were hiring people to play as
zombies. To play as zombies,
It's.
I knew an actor there who said that. He's like, pretend like you're crazy and you don't want to go with these guys. Like, that's a little ominous.
The guys at the gate to Cobb Panther gave me a flyer for it. I was delivering pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
I delivered them a pizza.
Yeah, you can get a part-time job doing it.
They were like, here, this pays like $14 an hour. It's just a weekend. Yeah. Like, it's 10-hour days. Yep. Like, you'll just be running around the woods acting like a zombie.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we've one of the creepiest
things. Had I not had to work, I would have done it.
They tried to close the road.
Really?
Through here. And they were like, you can't do that. This is the only access. You know exactly where we're MCR is back there, all that. The Pikey Camp's right back there.
Yeah.
Pikey Camp, we hang out there. We know people that live there. That's not a derogatory term.
I lived there
term.
For 2 years.
We used to party there. So
it
is.
That's what the nickname for it is.
it's called the Indiana Caverns.
I did not realize what that word means.
It means gypsy.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Now, this is literally by the rights. People live in campers that are just
derogative.
Yes. Yeah, clearly. Yep. That's what
But
Wikipedia
so is gypsy
has.
Now. So,
oh, sure.
I mean,
everyone in the camp
to be
knows what we're saying.
Ethnic Roma. But it's insane. When Clint and I lived out there, we pulled up the sex offender registry app, and it was nothing but red dots.
That does not surprise
me. All around us. And Clint was like, there may be a day we just snap and load up and just knock all these red dots out.
Oh my gosh, but I mean, looked in depth at the sex offender registry?
It's insane.
Because I have.
Fair.
I'm sure that a lot of the people on the sex offender registry have done things that I would quietly not oppose you taking them down for.
Yeah.
But some of them are things like you got drunk really, really drunk one night and you were out at a bar with your friends and you decided you really had to pee, but there was a line at the bathroom and you went out back.
Public indecency.
And all of a sudden you...
If you pee...
There happened to be some ladies walking down the
if
alley.
If you pee on a playground, you can be charged as a sex offender.
And that's like indecent exposure rather than public indecency.
Near a playground.
Yes.
We knew a guy around here who got into drugs and ran from the cops. And just so happened, the area he ran to, he ended up in a schoolyard. Modifier.
We had that guy that... Now, I do not condone anything he did.
No.
I don't. But you can decide for yourself on the morality scale what he deserved. So when he was 20, he was dating a 16-year-old. They dated for a year. Her parents were aware. He would eat dinner with her parents. Mm-hmm. Finally, the relationship ended. They were together over a year. When the relationship ended, she was not happy about it, so she convinced her parents to pursue charges on him. He ended up going to prison for 18 months and will be a registered sex offender the rest of his life because he dated a 17-year-old when he was 21. And with everyone involved knowing, I mean...
It's not like... So he was definitely not lying about his age. He wasn't mistaken about hers. Her parents were aware.
Everyone was on board until he ended things.
And that's got to be kind of rough.
Yeah.
I mean, especially because...
Literally will impact his life for the rest of his life.
If he had been 18...
Yeah.
When she was 16. That's still within the realm.
They've written that into the law now.
There's an exception when you're close enough in age.
Yeah, I think the cutoff is like 4 or 5 years. Yeah. And when does someone take on their own responsibility for who they date and go to bed with?
I mean, I'm going to tell you, at 16, I was positive that I knew.
Well, I think
at 40, I'm positive that I didn't.
Yeah. I think it's looking backwards, we say that we didn't know. But we did know. We may have been foolish.
Oh, sure.
But we knew what the fuck we were doing.
Absolutely.
I knew what the fuck I was doing at 16 years old. Yes. I knew when it was wrong. I knew when it was right.
Absolutely. Like, well,
in Indiana, the age of consent is 16, because we ran up against this in child welfare where we were like, no, you're not in trouble for dating the girl. You're in trouble for taking pictures of her, you moron.
That's insane.
And then they have
a serious charge. I wonder how he was found guilty. Because it was in Indiana, I'm pretty positive. It may have been in Illinois.
That would be possible.
Because I know he went to college in Illinois. He may have been.
That would make more sense. In Indiana, it's been 16 for a long time. I don't know about Ohio.
Yeah.
I believe it's younger in Ohio, but you can...
No, I think for a while, Kentucky was the only place... Or Alabama was the only place younger, and they got their head out of their ass. I think I remember this is old work training stuff where we'd have to talk about this stuff, right? Like what we can and cannot freak out about.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the camp back there where many a fond memory were made.
Yeah,
I remember driving back there in the middle of the night, and we see these like green eyes looking coming at us, and then. There's a line of them. They run up on the road. And by this time, we've pulled off on the side of the road and run by us. And it's a bunch of guys with their goggles, their night vision goggles. And they're like beacon things that you can, they're not bright, but you could see them. Yeah. And I was just like, that was scary as hell.
I actually just read a mystery that I was not aware of.
Uh-huh.
Revolving around the invention of night vision goggles. And maybe a story for another time. But supposedly the first night vision goggles were used during the Korean War. And it caused men to see into other dimensions.
Well, there's an interesting thing. I just had this conversation yesterday about night vision. China has revamped their entire military.
Really?
Their new service rifle is no longer a little bullpup. It looks like ours. Looks like an M4 with like a 10.5-inch barrel, 12.5, I don't know.
Yeah.
They have their own cartridge they have forever, but one of the things that stood out when they were doing their big ceremonial drills is that every soldier now has a night vision mount on their helmet.
Yeah.
Now, we are coming to the age, the night vision that you're talking about, Justin, the night vision that runs the irradiated tubes, they have very low draw. They just convert one, like a photon into an electron.
Okay.
That's how they operate. Yeah. You can get a white phosphor, green phosphor. So they're super efficient. They last a long time, but they're off color.
Yeah.
Now, they have already gotten to the point where your digital night vision, like how your phone takes low light, they're getting that to the point where it doesn't have the latency.
Yeah.
So it won't make you motion sick or you're not behind at all. Now, this is where it got really interesting. They're working on making that digital pick up an infrared that is out of the spectrum.
Wow.
That the older night vision can pick up.
That's crazy.
I went and looked, and those LEDs are already being manufactured.
Really?
So someone, probably China, is planning to go digital with night vision.
Yeah.
And apparently with all of their troops. Now, I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with this. The United States' dominance in war for the last couple of years has been because we had far superior technology to see at night.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. I think it's not good either that most of our electronics are directly made there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
A big shift. That's an interesting shift.
And if we
lose
Taiwan, that's where all of our microchips are made.
Yeah. So. Yep.
But that's a story for a whole nother day because I could spend hours. Hours.
Again, we are speeding up.
Yeah.
This bike shifted into the next gear.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to see if we could maybe recap just a little bit in case people want more information.
Let's do
it. So I know we talked about Bob Lazar a little bit, who Wikipedia characterizes him as a conspiracy theorist and self-proclaimed physicist.
Yeah.
However,
We now have the documents.
Yeah, yes. He's been investigated. The history was looked into. He really did work and live in the right
He really
place.
Did build a rocket-powered Honda CRX.
Yeah.
He said that was how he got discovered. Again, like Justin's saying, forever they said that he's made all this up. He's a habitual liar.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a younger kid, when these shows were on TV, I basically believed that this guy was just some kind of grifter. I'd never heard him speak. Just the stories. There are now photos of his newspaper article where they went and talked about his car. Now, was he in California or...
L.A.
He was in L.A. I know that at least now, if you put a...
I'm sorry, Los Alamos. My bad.
Okay, Nevada.
Yeah.
In California now, if you put any form of turbine jet engine in a vehicle, you can register it as a hybrid.
Wow. That's cool.
That's pretty funny.
Very interesting thing. But yeah, they have the proof that he was there, and then they've had people directly say, yes, he worked at the site 114, or what's it called?
Yeah. Oh, it's Element 115.
Yeah. Actually,
that was it.
I think I called it 151.
151. That's Bacardi.
Yeah.
That they banned.
but 115 was officially synthesized in 2003, a joint U.S. and
Which
Russian
is funny, because he's been discussing it since the 80s.
Since
he
the
80s. Sure has. And it was kind of theoretical, supposedly, at that point. And it is now called Muscovium, if anybody wants to look. Now, it's very, very radioactive and not very,
very
stable.
Volatile.
It has a half-life of, like, less than a second.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And supposedly he had a stable isotope of it going, which, honestly, given the rest of what's going on here, sure.
Yeah. So,
quick recap on what...
I feel like the writers are just running out of things to write about, so they're just keeping it interesting.
They're just going back and re-bringing up old characters. Like, wait a minute, we did this guy dirty. So the story with Bob is, this is the whole story, he said he was working at the site S-41 or something like that. And Area 51 was where they were doing the aerial testing.
Yeah, it was a sister site.
He was here. Now that I've heard him speak, he will openly say, I have no idea how much I was told is true or fake. They would give us fake words and fake flags to where if they leaked out, they would know what team they came from.
Yeah.
You did not get to work with other people.
And he said that everything was very departmentalized so that he never knew what the whole project was. He only knew his piece. And... Have you ever heard him speak on why he was terminated?
Yes, this is where it gets to this human element.
Yeah, his wife was cheating on him. They had his phone bugged. They didn't bother telling him that.
No.
They just did away with his classification. He showed up to work and couldn't get in the building.
Oh, my gosh.
Come to find out that his phone had been tapped, and they found the affair and thought of him as now...
compromised assets.
Yeah, compromised.
Sure. Well, and he has a couple of criminal convictions that...
They don't look good.
Uh-huh.
They don't look good. He was arrested in 1990 for aiding and abetting a prostitution ring.
Yeah.
The charge was reduced, but like...
And see, to me, I've brought it up repeatedly, everybody that's really interesting has some kind of deviancy going on.
Yeah.
I'd agree to that. And let's keep in mind that this is in Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of confused how they even get charged with that.
Confused.
Yeah. It wasn't legal yet, I imagine.
And then supposedly in 2006, he and his wife shipped restricted chemicals across state lines. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Nevada, but especially like that particular part of the world, sometimes you kind of have to go out of the state to get back into the state.
Yeah.
And there are many places around the country that are exactly like that. So I could totally see that being a little bit overblown.
What were the chemicals?
Well, let's see.
Element 115.
Probably not.
No.
Don't try this at home. Interesting. So Wired Magazine covered this. Oh my gosh. Federal case out of DIY science, basically. This is a well-written article. The first line of it is, The first startling thing Joy White saw out of her bedroom window was a man running toward her door with an M16. Like, are you sold? I'm sold. I want to read.
Oh, yeah. Those. Let's hear. Let's hear.
So her, that Joy White, by the way, is Bob Lazar's wife. So this is June 2003. They are getting arrested while they're, you know, still in their bedroom. So I don't know if they were sleeping, but, you know, pretty close to that. And yeah, it seems like, oh, this is in New Mexico.
Okay.
Okay. So, they lived, okay. Their home business was known as United Nuclear Scientific Supplies.
Okay.
A mail order outfit that served amateur scientists, students, teachers, and law enforcement professionals.
Okay.
So it's just a house in the mountains east of Albuquerque. They have marked their vehicles with, you know, a lot of caution, radiation signs. And then, you know, obviously he's been very involved in nuclear development the whole time. And notice that law enforcement was one of the sources, like one of the customers for their company. So it's correct. Not like they were unknown. Fire departments, for example, in Nevada and California send for their Geiger counters and uranium ore to train hazmat crews. Like, they were
a legitimate company, yeah.
Legitimate and recognized and utilized company. But they still got arrested, and the search was initiated by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, best known for instigating recalls of faulty cribs and fire-prone space heaters. Now, I'm not saying that either of those things are bad. I'm just saying,
that's really? A big leap.
Really?
It's a big leap. This like, leap, this tracks more with the, I've yeah. been harassed my whole life since this.
Yeah. Sulfur, potassium perchlorate, and powdered aluminum, all of
flash
which
powder.
Can be used to make illegal fireworks. That is why they got raided.
That's insane.
Not the fucking uranium.
That's
not
absurd.
That's what gets me.
To me, that lends legitimacy to him more than it
does.
It really does.
It really
does. Yeah.
So, they were selling what amounted to kits for making M80s, cherry bombs, and other prohibited items. Which,
oh,
by
wow.
the way, these were not prohibited in all states.
Yeah.
I want to make that clear. And we don't really know. It doesn't say here where they were shipping them to.
Yeah. It doesn't even say that all they had were the prerequisites for those items.
Right.
They weren't manufacturing those items or...
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So they... So they ended up charging the company rather than...
Than Bob himself.
Yeah.
And they pled guilty to a few things, and so they were eventually just fined.
Yeah.
And that was it. And it was $7,500, which in 2007, not a terrible amount of money.
Yeah, especially if it was a functioning company.
So basically, they probably... Now, keep in mind, the raid was in 2003. The fine was in 2007.
Yeah.
Over the course of that time, how much did they pay in legal fees?
Yeah.
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
But all of this was not because of his involvement in anything related to... nuclear physics or element 115.
That's insane.
Just freaking fireworks.
Wow.
Just to harass him.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't know we were going to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, so again, NASA has a very spotted past, but you know, smart people tend to get into things. Like things that sometimes we're confused by. I'm like, okay. You do you.
Yeah.
So we are, hopefully things are going to start getting better soon. I don't know, Justin, is work going good?
Yeah. I'm a nihilist.
Fair enough. So work never goes good. It's always work.
Yes.
It could be better. I could be in the woods taking photos.
It's all meaningless.
Fair. Something really fun to close on. I joined a Facebook group called All Bugs Go to Kevin. K-E-V-I-N.
Yeah.
And it has just been wonderful. This guy apparently She started getting a lot of questions about insects, and he now has one of the most popular Facebook groups
out there. That's fantastic. I have a Facebook group that I'm enjoying a whole lot. Just for the pure comedy gold that it is. It's Christians Against Dinosaurs.
Yes, I've heard this one. Yeah, is it still going?
I love it.
It's amazing.
So
if you ever get the opportunity to eat acid and go to the Creationist Museum in Kentucky and we alienate Christians, it is a lot of fun. I did that for my 35th birthday. It was amazing.
I mean, it sounds like fun.
They literally have a Jesus on a raptor statue.
I've seen that. I did not know that was an actual thing.
It's a very heady place to be tripping balls, I'm telling you.
One of my friends went there. He's Jewish, and he went there with his very Jewish father,
right?
And stepmother out of pure curiosity.
Yeah, that's
right.
Why
like they lived close enough that they were like, we can't not go see it, and we can't judge it unless we've seen
unless
it.
They have a life size ark as well.
I remember that being built. Yeah. And there's quite a lot of controversy over that being built because they received a lot of tax credits.
Yeah, from the state of Kentucky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is insane.
Good times.
Yeah.
But so my friend almost got kicked out for taking photos, which he was actually texting me, live texting.
Yeah. Oh, I ended the evening getting kicked out.
So you're not allowed to do photos there?
No.
There are certain things. I was taking pictures outside just fine, but once I got inside and I wanted to take pictures of the statues and stuff, I eventually got kicked out, but it was fantastic. Well, my friend knew me very well. She was like, for your 35th birthday, would you like to eat acid and go to the Creationist Museum? And I was like, I want nothing more.
She sounds like a great friend.
Yeah, I'm like, I want nothing more. And that's exactly what we did. Then we went to the planetarium. Beautiful day.
That's such a nice day. So on All Bugs Go to Kevin, a lot of posts come out of Ohio and Indiana because we're kind of in the middle of a wilderness here, really.
Yeah.
Yes.
And someone just posted a video. They found the Otheca, I believe it's called, of a giant moth.
Really?
And had video of it vibrating, so they put a net over it. And now I'm signed up to watch this. I can't wait.
I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it. It's a long, complicated name. There is another page I would love to shout out that you literally have to pay attention to the group to understand any of the memes because there's trends that happen very quickly. It's called Wild Green Memes for the Ecological Fiends. It's
so
fantastic.
My favorite group, well, I have a lot, but one of them is Bathrooms with Threatening Auras.
Yes, I'm actually on that page as well.
It is really interesting, and having seen many threatening bathrooms myself, I'm sad that I don't have more photos of them.
Yes. I posted 3 years ago that if you attended a punk rock show and used the bathroom in the 90s, you're immune to COVID.
Oh, yes. Yeah, if you've been to the McDonald's bathroom in, the island of Venice in the 90s, I guarantee you, you're immune to everything.
Really?
Everything.
That bad, huh?
I walked into it. I did not use it. And I really had to pee.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, folks. We've got to pack this up for the night. We're back. We're all experiencing a lot of turmoil and a lot of things going on in and out of town. But we're going to figure something out. I still really want to read some stories.
Yeah.
I've got some stuff I need to get written down that is on my mind. And Justin, again, he has access to some cool stuff. I asked about a short story, but it's part of a bigger collection.
Yeah.
So I couldn't share that one.
Yeah.
But I'm glad. I feel good. It feels good to get here and talk and be able to share our...
I would like to get back to a regular recording schedule.
Yeah, we're going to definitely try.
Okay.
So, Moneypenny, anything to share?
I'm just trying to live my dream and hoping that all of this financial crisis can just find a direction and keep on it.
Keep on it. We can steer either way.
At this point, if the whole financial system collapses, at least then I can form a game plan.
Yeah.
But at this point, I feel like every week is a new world.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know how to move forward when that's... And I don't know how to reassure other people, which is a role that I'm frequently asked to take. So
the way I found to reassure everyone is it's all meaningless.
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't want to buckle down to the point where I buy like a tank of diesel for the backyard and garden beds.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get to that. I think it's just going to be everything gets super expensive.
Yeah.
And then... And everyone kind of wonders, like, hey, what the heck? So,
yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, folks. And, you know, one way or the other, we'll be here to give you our take on it and bring up some interesting things that can hopefully keep us distracted. I'm looking forward to these moths.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really got me, my interest peaked.
Yeah.
So, all right, folks. Well, thank you again for sitting with us. So, everybody keep your head on straight and keep on dumpster diving.
Praise God.